The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. It is 4 minutes past nine on this Tuesday. It is the 12th of September 2023. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed, and you're on board now. The 9 till noon train until 12 o'clock. It's the only train that functions daily here in County Donegal. The lines are open for you now if you want to speak to the Ticketmaster. It's 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. That's your WhatsApps and texts. And 07491 25000 if you wish to give us a call. And we have Niamh and Donna Murray going up and down the carriages to make sure you're very well looked after. And if you want to email the show, it's comments@highlandradio.com. comments@highlandradio.com. Right, okay, just to remind you too, you can watch the show on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, on your smart TV. Normally has the app installed there. You can cast us up there, see most of our guests, or on your Fire Stick as well. You might have to download the YouTube app and the Fire Stick. It depends on which way it was loaded for you. Right, okay. Let's look at the front of the newspapers today. The Donegal Democrat reports that an inquest into the death of Killie Gordon, mother of two, Jasmine McMonagall, has been formally closed. Donegal coroner Dr. Dennis McCauley reopened the inquest briefly on Friday morning at Donegal Town Courthouse. The family of the 28-year-old hairdresser, who was found dead at her home at Forest Park Killie Gordon in the early hours of January 4th, 2019, opted not to proceed with the formal inquest. In May, Richard Burke, Ms. McMonagall's on-off partner, was jailed for 14 years for her killing. In March, a jury at the Central Criminal Court returned a verdict of not guilty of murder, but guilty of manslaughter by reason of diminished responsibility. An inquest into Ms. McMonagall's death was previously reopened in February of this year, but was adjourned under Section 25(2) of the Coroner's Act, as criminal proceedings were still ongoing. And the matter has now been brought to a close. On to the Nationals now, and an interesting commentary from Micheál Martin. I'm very interested to see what you think, by the way, out there, regardless of your political involvement or not. He's launched a fresh attack on Sinn Féin, who very much likely will be his coalition partners in the next government. It's likely, I'll say it's not necessarily a front runner, but it's certainly not to be ruled out. But anyway, Taoiseach Micheál Martin opened the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party's thinking in County Tipperary yesterday with a stinging attack on Sinn Féin, describing the party's anti-enterprise, anti-Europe and two-faced on climate action. As Fianna Fáil TD senators and MEPs gathered in the Horse and Jockey Hotel, a large group of farmers protested outside, though they were somewhat mollified after meeting Mr. Martin and Minister for Agriculture Charlie McConnell-Logue. The meeting, the first of a series of think-ins to be held by all the parties in advance of the next week's return of the Dáil, discussed budget priorities, education, transport and climate, and also preparation for local and European elections, which take place next year. But he also had a go at the press, saying that he believed that much of the mainstream media were cheerleaders for Sinn Féin. I don't know what you think about that. Maybe you do believe that is the case. 086 60 25000. As I say, he says they're not challenged, or they get a free handy ride, and people are the media are cheerleaders for Sinn Féin. On to the Irish Independent now, and if you're on a tracker mortgage or variable rate still, there is now the threat of another European interest rate rise. It's stalking you as the European Central Bank meets again this week. It had been hoped that the 9 hikes in lending rates, the ECB, would not impose another rise when it meets. But now the crunch decision on whether it raises interest rates again this Thursday or pauses appears to be on a knife edge. And it's complicated for them to justify it one way or other, because there are economies in different flux across Europe. So you have inflation falling down in some big economies and going up in other big economies. Smaller economies going down, in others it's going up. So in other words, there's not a silver bullet EU-wide decision that can be taken that would suit all of those scenarios. There's a lot of internal factors in countries. Well, the 9 rate hikes since last July have pounded tracker mortgage holders, seen mortgage prisoners paying rates as high as 9%, and made borrowing far more expensive for first-time buyers. Some 70,000 homeowners coming off fixed rates by the end of this year are also paying huge hikes in repayments. Money markets think the governing council at the Frankfurt-based central bank will hold off on another rate rise when it meets this Thursday, due to fears of a recession in Europe. But that's kind of what they want, you see. That's what they're trying to do, because that flattens inflation. But a number of economists are adamant that rates will rise again this week as inflation is proving persistent. But as I say, there are nuances, and there are people on tracker mortgages paying double what they once were, which is a huge expense to try and absorb with everything else that's going on. The Irish Daily Mail: Gardaí have concluded their vote of confidence in Commissioner Drew Harris, which is expected to end in a landslide result against the force's top officer. Huge anger about the roster issue and Garda declines. Gardaí's declining morale is expected to bring about an overwhelming vote against the commission or the commissioner. A source said, if you get 7,000 or 8,000 of your staff saying they do not think you're doing a good job, that will be very uncomfortable for the commissioner. But he's got the backing of the government. Leo Varadkar recently stated that he has to be able to do his job, and even if those who work under him don't believe he's doing that well, so be it. One Garda said, a source, Garda are honestly just fed up. There's the roster issue, which is just making them pull their hair out, and the commissioners, pulling the commissioner's hair out. Garda are honestly just fed up. There's the roster issue, which is just making them pull the hair out, and the commissioner. Okay, every time I read the newspapers in the morning, there's errors in here, but anyway. But it's not just the roster and on it goes. So effectively, now the AGSI was mentioned in a text on this show last week, the start of last week, that the AGSI were voting on this issue as well. They aren't. They have no. They're not voting on it at all. It's just the GRA, and it's expected that the rank and file Gardaí will overwhelmingly vote no confidence in the Garda commissioner. The Irish Daily Star now: RTE employees in receipt of car allowances, wait for it, do not need to have a driver's licence. New documents from the national broadcaster have confirmed. It did not confirm, however, how many of the 61 people working for the national broadcaster in receipt of allowances worth nearly €657,000 can legally drive. Emails shared by the national broadcaster also show that Noel Kelly contacted RTE four times about a €75,000 payment for Ryan Tubridy. The national broadcaster claimed it had come under pressure from the agent to pay the now infamous side deal agreement. Patrick Kilty's also interviewed. He's got a tough old job, I suppose, in that he's launching his, and a lot of people very excited about his Late Late Show, which starts on Friday, but still this air of controversy around RTE persists. It's not ideal. But I'll just read a couple of quotes from him. Patrick Kilty said he can understand the anger behind people refusing to pay for TV licences amid the RTE payment scandal. However, he says he's had no second thoughts about taking on the Late Late Show gig and feels that the show's return will remind people of the importance of public broadcasting. And I suppose there's the €250,000 per year, which would also soften the cough somehow. The education minister seems to be a little bit of lag between public opinion and conversation and general discourse and her views. She's been speaking about mobile phone use in primary schools. Parents of primary school children will be asked not to buy their kids' phones. Education Minister Norma Foley revealed plans for the new national campaign. Earlier this year, mums and dads in Greystones, County Wicklow, came together to agree none would buy youngsters' phones. The voluntary agreement came about as parents worried about increased anxiety in kids due to too much screen time. Inspired by the Greystones deal, Minister Foley has now asked for officials to draw up policies to help other schools introduce the same ban on smartphones. So would you agree in a national campaign? There's two stories in there, banning phones in national schools, primary schools, and B, encouraging parents, and it wouldn't be cheap either, encouraging parents not to buy very young children, you know, your 6, 7, 8, 9s, 10s, 11s, 12s, perhaps, a mobile phone. Would you be on for that? 086 60 25,000. Ireland should follow the lead of an Australian city and ban the sale of shots after 2 a.m, a councillor has claimed. This is the Irish Daily Mirror. The measure was imposed by authorities in Adelaide last month in a bid to crack down on a rising problem of boozy late-night violence. Now Dublin Independent Councillor Manix Flynn says similar measures should be introduced here. His comments come ahead of planned new laws allowing pubs to stay open until 12:30 a.m. every day. Late bars, they'll be able to run to 2:30. Nightclubs will be able to run to 6 a.m. The move has been welcomed by nightlife bodies, of course, but other groups such as Alcohol Action Ireland have warned they may lead to greater addiction issues and more social disorder. I think that's a given, isn't it? Well, Councillor Finn said the shots ban could be a way of avoiding people getting as heavily inebriated. What do you think about that? He's suggesting follow the Australian lead, the Adelaide lead, ban shots in pubs and nightclubs after 2 a.m. Do you think that goes far enough? Do you think that's part of the problem? What's going on? 086 60 25,000. Let us know what you think, please. And you can also call us on 074 91 25,000. All right, we've loads to come, including, by the way, Community Garda information. That's coming up just after 10, where you hear first the latest news and appeals from An Garda Síochána. That and so much besides on the way. We're going to talk again and continue a conversation about, I suppose, people's access to services, but then the lack of medical staff to provide these services. And a lot of it is, as we've been trying to highlight, down to recruitment practices and issues that we'll tease out right now with Jenny Bears. Good morning to you. Thank you very much for joining us, Jenny.
Good morning, Greg.
Great to have you on the programme. Okay, so you are a qualified medical professional or going through the qualification process at the moment?
I am a qualified optometrist. So I qualified in Coleraine in 2012.
Yeah, go ahead. Continue with the story, Jenny. Sorry, I beg your pardon.
So I qualified in Coleraine in 2012 and then went to England to complete my pre-reg, which is like a placement year. So I qualified that in 2013 and I've been working in England ever since. But in December of last year, we decided to move home to Donegal. And from when I began to tell people that we were moving home, a lot of people I know started saying, oh, have you gone through the CORU process yet? Mm-hmm. You know, you need to get that started. It's a really difficult process. So I started that in March with the application and I'm still yet to have my qualification recognised in the Republic of Ireland.
And, sorry, when did you actually start the process of March of which year?
March of 23.
So, and still now, you're still going through this, CORU process, which effectively is this state recognising qualifications which were obtained outside of the state.
Yes, so CORU is in charge of dietitians, occupational therapists, optometrists, physios, social workers and speech and language therapists and a few others as well. Mm. So any of those qualifications that have been obtained outside of the Republic of Ireland.
What does the process involve, Jenny?
So in order for me to, it's an online form, first of all, I had to fill out and I needed copies of my passport, my marriage certificate, my birth certificate, proof of my degree, proof of my membership of the General Optical Council, proof of my college membership. I also needed transcripts from the university, certificate of my degree, and a syllabus, a copy of the course syllabus from 2009, with each page had to be stamped and certified by the university.
Wow.
So by the time I got all of those things through, my application went in on April. And ever since then, I've been ringing regularly and the system I feel isn't really working because every time I ring them, they haven't received emails or they haven't looked for them. And I keep emailing and I get nothing back. And this is a very lengthy process. And I'm still probably about 4 months out from actually getting recognition through.
It's so complicated, I think many would be discouraged from even going through that process.
Mm-hmm. I know several people, either dietitians or optometrists, that have given up and just either stay in the UK or Northern Ireland because they just can't, it just takes so long to get through.
Do you think it's just too much red tape or do you think there's a shortage of staff? But sure, we don't know because you can't really, it doesn't sound like they're very communicative with you.
No. So I think it probably is just too much red tape. You know, the process for getting your degree recognised is the same regardless of where your university was. So whether it's Northern Ireland or America, Australia, India, it's the exact same process for everyone to get the qualifications recognised. And every single applicant has to go through the same process. So instead of certifying perhaps like optometry in Coleraine, everyone who done it there, we agree that that's up to our standard. Each person has to go through the same process. So that's what really holds things up. And then anytime I've emailed them, I get kind of a stock email sent back, copy and pasted. Your documents are in a queue. You know, they'll be reviewed shortly by a team member. But weeks could go by and I still hear nothing. And then it seems like when I ring them, when I'm actually on the phone, they then say, oh, yeah, we've just found this email that came through last month. We'll just add that to your file now. So it's almost like nobody's actively working on the cases unless you're actually on the phone to them.
It's almost like all the information you've provided to them is scattered about the place and no one's actually working to bring it together.
Exactly, yeah. And there's been several of like my former employers that have had to send emails to them maybe up to four times. So then I'm having to go around and ask, you know, the people, the admin staff from the university and the GOC, can you send that again? Sorry, they say they haven't received it. And it's just taken a long, long time and it just seems so inefficient.
Yeah, and it's not just the time and the fact that we need you working as an optometrist here. I mean, how many people can give up an income at the level they're able to sort of achieve for a year, months on end? I mean, you know, you just moved back here. You know there are vacancies. You want to get back to work. You want to start paying bills. I mean, how many people just say, well, we can't do this any longer because we have to pay the bills?
Yeah. So I'm lucky because I can still work in Northern Ireland.
Yes.
And obviously we live quite close to the border. But if I had moved to Galway or Cork, you know, I would just be out of work until it's come through.
Yeah. And as you say too, obviously you're an optometrist, but we're also talking about physiotherapists, social workers, speech and language therapists, radiographers and radiation therapists, occupation therapists, medical sciences, medical science. And on it goes and on it goes. And this is this is we're going to be speaking to other people later on in the morning. They aren't entering to this process because it's so convoluted and because they don't want to be nagging universities and all this type of stuff. I mean, why is it not streamlined?
Yeah, there should be some sort of fast track. There's 16 universities in the UK that do optometry and there's only one in the whole of the Republic of Ireland, as far as I'm aware. So for your optometrist, I can only speak from my experience, lots of people in Ireland are going to have to go abroad to get, you know, or go to Northern Ireland or go to the UK to get this degree.
Yes.
So you're going to have a lot of people trying to come back, having to go through this process. You're not going to be able to fulfill all the optometry jobs in Ireland with just one university doing the course.
And
so there should be some sort of...
Say you wish to work sort of in the private sector or in the public sector, do the same rules apply, Jenny?
Yeah, you still have to have the same registration.
Right, okay. And it's going to be at least...
To get your degree recognised.
I beg your pardon, Jenny. It's going to be at least October before you... And I would suspect you have little faith that it will be delivered in October before your excellent qualifications are actually recognised so you can work and you can work in the Republic of Ireland.
So CARU only, I believe, meets once every 4 months.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So once you actually have all your paperwork in order, which is the stage that I'm stuck on at the moment, because nobody seems to be actively, you know, collating my paperwork into the one place. But once I get past this stage, it could still be 4 months from then before I'll get recognition.
You have to pay as well. I think it's at $750.
Yes, you have to pay. And then you also have to pay because some of the documents from like the College of Optometrists, you have to pay them little fees to get these things sent out to you. A lot of my documents had to be certified by a solicitor. So you have to pay a solicitor to do these.
Wow.
So it's little things all adding up as well here and there.
And if you had, and pardon my ignorance because I'm learning as we go here, Jenny, if you had completed all of your studies in Northern Ireland and received your qualification there and, say, continue to work in Northern Ireland, you still would have to go through this process?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's remarkable. Okay, Jenny, listen, thanks for your time. Thanks for helping us understand where the problems are. Okay, appreciate
That's all right.
it.
Thanks
and
for
I hope
having
things
me on.
Come through quicker. Come through quicker than you might anticipate. Thanks, Jenny. Amy Sweeney's with us as well. Amy's training to be an occupational therapist. Amy, good morning to you. How are you keeping?
Morning, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Okay, so what made you want to become an OT?
I have seen, like, OT. My brother has intellectual disabilities, and I've seen him going through that process from when we were very young. And just like seeing him and stuff, and it just always, like, stuck out to me. So I always knew I wanted to do something in healthcare, and then OT just kind of came to me then when I was kind of, like, doing my leaving cert and all, and I got in then, so that's what made me want to do it.
And had you a preference? Did you fancy doing your study in Britain, Northern Ireland, or did you want to do it in the Republic of Ireland? Talk to us about when you started digging a little bit deeper, what your experience was.
So, yeah, I wanted to kind of do it as close to home as possible, but then when you were looking down the country and stuff to do it, like, the first thing for me was the NHS will cover your fees completely when you study in Derry. And it's just kind of like an incentive to stay, I'd say, with them, like, you know, to stay in the north and continue working.
Just to recap that, because this is really critical. The NHS covers college fees for the 3 years, but if you were to go to Galway, now, unless you were able to qualify for the SUSE grant, you have to pay for that yourself.
Yeah, that's correct. McGee University, they will pay for... They cover the fees of every sort of healthcare course, like the likes of dietitian, nursing, physio, podiatry. They cover all the fees for them courses as an incentive. And as well, they only will allow applicants from the north of Ireland as well as the south of Ireland. And I think that's an initiative as well to get people to stay, because there was probably people qualifying and then just leaving to go back to, say, the likes of England or Wales, wherever they were from. So I think it just seems a lot more appealing to me. Like, they were kind of giving you incentives to do the course.
Is there any obligation on you to work as an OT in the North after your qualification, as they're covering your college fees?
No, there's none. Like, there's some courses in England will do that. Like, physio, I think, if you say they'll cover your fees, but you have to work for 3 years. With them to kind of, as you say, like, as an obligation, but no, there's none at all. Like, if you wanted to, you could just go and leave and work in Australia as soon as you qualify. So,
and just in terms of then the NHS and the HSE, like, do the NHS then try and entice you? Or, like, I don't know how far into your studies you are, but, like, do you find that the HSE are trying to reach out to you, or the NHS are trying to reach out to you, say, look, this is what we have to offer you if you're qualified, or maybe it's a little bit early in your course? I don't know, Amy.
Yeah, like, even just, I work as a healthcare assistant, and when I'm up in the hospital, I tell people I'm studying to be an OT, and they're like, oh, like, you'll no bother getting a job here. And then I say I'm studying in the north, and then of course, then it's the nurses being like, oh, that query process, like, there's no point in doing it. You know what I mean? But, like, it just seems like the job opportunities, even in the north, just seem so much more better. Like, considering placement-wise and stuff, you get to see so much more. And I'm not saying the waiting list for occupational therapy and all in the NHS are shorter. But, yeah, like, there just seems to be, like, if you look online, the difference in... like, job, like, even the benefits and stuff for a job in the NHS versus the HSE, like, and the pay and stuff.
Yeah, so the whole experience of how you were treated as a student, what they would offer you as, you know, as you qualify and go out working as an OT, you would have to make, let's talk about this CARU process. Like, when did you become familiar with that? This long drawn out, terribly misorganized, it seems, or unorganized process to have your UK, in inverted commas, qualifications recognized in the Republic. Like, did you know that from the get go, or have just people been talking to you about this as you've been going through your education, Amy?
Yeah, it was kind of more like when I was working, because I work for an agency, so like healthcare, so I could be in like different locations, and it was everyone there. Like, I never really knew how long it took. Like, I just, like, I've heard people say to me before, it's expensive, but it's, you know, sometimes it's worth it if you want to move back home. But like, it was nurses and OTs and physios I was chatting to in the hospital that I got chatting to. They were saying, like, oh, it's not worth it. It could take you weeks. It could take you months. It could take you years. You're just far better off. And I suppose We're lucky because we're so close. Like, I could still live in Letterkenny and work in the north. Do you know what I mean? But, like, as I said previously, if you were to study in Derry and you were from Dublin and you really wanted to move back home for reasons, like, you'd just be, you'd, like, I don't know what you would do. You'd be so out of pocket for so long.
And I don't mean this bad, because it's fantastic for you, but that's no good to us, Amy. We need you working here. It's great that you can live in Donegal and work in the north. But, like, because just to put context on this, we've been covering this for the last while now. Parents with children under the Disability Network team across the county have received letters explaining they may lose out and in some cases will lose out due to recruitment and vacancy issues. There are a number of vacancies in occupational therapy. Now, if Donegal girl Amy goes, right, do you know what? I might apply for one of those jobs. Amy would be expected to pay into the thousands of euro and to go through a CARU regulation process on the same island as she got her qualifications before she could even apply for that job. And it would be at least 9 months, maybe a year or more, before the Northern Irish on the same island qualifications were recognised so that Amy could go in working with the team in Donegal. I mean, it's a broken system, Amy, isn't it? Now, you may choose to work in the north anyway, and that's up to you, and that's fantastic, and you're helping fellow county people in different counties. But why would you go put yourself through what you'd have to put yourself through to work in Donegal for worse conditions?
Yeah, exactly. Like, as I say, I would have experience with the disability sector. I've seen it with, like, my mum dealing with it with my brother and stuff. And, like, to me, I see it's definitely not the likes of the occupational therapist, speech and language therapist. It's more like the system, like, they're getting work put on them that's not in their scope, or like, they feel bad. Like, as soon as my brother turned 18, he was completely signed off with occupational therapists. Like, he was discharged from OT and physio, and mum was never able to get respite for him. But the time, like, as soon as he turned 18, it was offered to him. I don't know if that was because of staffing and age and stuff, but I would love to work in the disability sector, but as you say, it just seems so much more appealing in the north.
Yeah.
And just to go through that whole process, like, it just seems so much more better.
And we do recognise, Amy, and it's been said a couple of times, that it's the same in the CALM services, the people that are working in the child and young adult mental health services, as well as those that remain in the Children's Disability Network teams. I imagine it's really tough. Huge workloads. They would love to be able to do more, but they can't. They need more colleagues to share the workload, maybe that they're working in their lane rather than having to sort of, you know, it must be a really, really tough area to be working in. So it's really important that they hear that we're backing them as well, Amy. This isn't a criticism of the staff working within it. It's recognising the fact that we need to recruit more and make it easier to recruit more to help them and help children and therefore help families.
Yeah, 100%. Like, as I say, I was chatting to an OT who, she works in paediatrics, but she would be getting pulled into the likes of, like adults and stuff. And she says, like, she just lost the enjoyment of her job because it just wasn't in her scope. Like, it wasn't what she basically signed up for, and it was stuff she wasn't trained on. She was getting sort of made to do, and she just kind of lost her love for it because they are so understaffed. She was just getting pulled here, there, and everywhere. And it's definitely not the problem of the staff. Even working in the hospital, you can see it's just work getting piled on top of people because of these recruitments and or because of these shortages. So I don't know. I think just something needs to be done in terms of, like, incentives for people or even students and stuff. I don't know.
Well, but I mean, if anyone listened to Jenny there talking about what she's going through with the CARU process, the CORU process, it would discourage you. That's not her intention. But she's calling them and they're going, oh, yeah, we found that email now. She sent it a month ago thinking, right, work's happening now to progress this, that I can go into employment that matches my qualifications. And no one's actually even chasing this stuff up. Yeah, we have international recruitment campaigns. I wonder how that works. Like, something needs to be done here, Amy, because we're losing fantastic talent like you, and it will always be your choice where you work. But if we could make it a little bit easier, you might decide to do 5 years in Northern Ireland and then, you know, move back and settle and work in Donegal. But how, why would you put yourself through that Coru process?
Yeah, definitely. Like, that's what I mean. Like, if they are trying to get people and they are continuing to talk about these shortages of staff, I just don't know why they're making it easier. Like, I would love to move, like, I would love to work in Donegal and stuff, but as I say, it's just so off-putting. Like, there's just no appeal at all to work for the HSE for many reasons. Like, and I don't know, just something needs to be sorted soon, because they're just going to have no staff at all. Like, everyone, I'm in my early 20s, and every day you go on Facebook, there's someone else moving to Australia with their degree, or Canada, London, England. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't know.
And even, and I'll let you go now, but even if you wanted to, like, we heard from Jenny about solicitor's fees and every page having to be stamped and all that stuff. A recognition aptitude test, €500. Registration recognition, €250. That's an appeal process. But anyway, at least a minimum €500 that you would have to pay for the right to go through this year-long process to apply for a job and work in an understaffed sector. It doesn't take, it's not hard to work out where the problems lie, Amy.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it just seems like no one is going to want to train for the HSE anymore. And, like, I don't know. Like, as you say, I just don't know what they're doing, to be honest.
Okay, Amy. Well, listen, best of luck with your career. I hope the powers that be look at this so that when you choose that you want to, that you can come and work in the Republic without having to jump through these numerous hoops. But it's giving us a real interesting insight, Amy, and that's why I'm so keen to speak to you as to why we're having these recruitment issues. Best of luck with everything into your future, Amy.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much, Amy Sweeney there. I do have to take a very quick break, and then we're going to be speaking to another mom who is trying to or is dealing with the Childhood Disability Network team and the challenges faced within. Okay, so you will know now, many parents received a letter from the Children's Disability Network team from different teams across Donegal, explaining they may lose out in services due to recruitment and vacancy issues. The letter outlined children with the most complex needs in speech, in terms of speech therapy, occupational therapy and psychology services will be prioritised. We spoke to one mum yesterday whose child received, I think it was three speech therapy or four speech therapy sessions, and she could see the improvement in her little baby. But then was told that, unfortunately, that's it now. That's the end of it, because we have to prioritise these services. So this is not just going forward. There are people who are trying to engage with such services that have ongoing issues. This is not something that began yesterday. Kirsty Robb's with us now. Kirsty, sorry for holding you, but thank you very much for joining us, and good morning to you.
Yeah, you're all right. How are you?
I'm doing okay, Kirsty. What's your situation? You've been engaging with the network since 2019, I think.
I've been with them since 2019 with my first wee boy. I have two wee boys. Mm-hmm. They're 4 and 5. And they're both, I had to go private then, end up to get them diagnosed, to get them into school, because nothing was happening with the team. So
just to be clear, they were coming to the school going age, and up until then you hadn't even received a diagnosis so they could attend school. So at that point you had to go private for that diagnosis. Right. Okay. Now, since
they're both up in Little Angels. I belong to Little Angels. That my youngest boy now, or my oldest boy, he's in senior infants, and then my youngest wee boy, he's in he should have been starting junior infants, but he'd done the 2 years of the preschool. Mm-hmm. So he's under the second year of the preschool now, but you need your diagnosis to get into the wee autism preschool. So that's why I went private then, to get that done, to get them in, to get them a bit of help, because I wasn't getting it anywhere else. So
now both of them need supports, OT, psychology, speech therapy. So they're now 4 and 5, I think. Uh-huh. You said. How many sessions of any of those disciplines have they had so far in their young lives?
My oldest wee boy has got, I would say he's got about 5 speech therapy. Mm. And he's seen the physio once, and then that's it. And then my youngest wee boy's got nothing yet.
Nothing.
And I went through assessments and needs for him, and I remember getting the dates for the dates that the therapies would start. And I remember crying and saying, these are so far away. How can we wait this long? And now we're a year past them as well. Do you know? And I still haven't got them. And we're a year past the assessment and need dates that we were promised.
And you've just got the letter.
And we got the letter then. Now
the
to
no
say
hope
that there's
letter.
No OT and that the speech and language therapist is down to one. So it's the most severe cases. And like both my boys is completely non-verbal and don't understand anything we're saying to them. Or like if I say to them, oh, we're going in the car, or oh, do you want sweets? Or like they don't have a clue what I'm saying to them. Do you know? And they're 4 and 5. Like, and it's just, what's more severe than that whenever it comes to speech and language? Do you know?
Yeah, and it's also very, very difficult as parents because you know that if they had access to some of these supports, you would they could communicate better with you. They may start speaking,
yeah,
they might start edging towards milestones, and that would be, I presume, as a mom, Kirsty, that'd be everything to you.
Oh, definitely. Like, see the occupational side. Like, I don't have a clue. I didn't know autism until it came to my door. Mm. Do you know? And I'm just learning through my boys, and like their sensory needs are so bad, especially the youngest wee boy has sensory needs are huge, and I don't know, I'm just trying things and looking up things, and like there's no support there to even tell me what to do, or like, oh, this is what you can do to help him and stuff. There's nothing. Like, there's, and has, like, as I say, he has a lot of sensory issues. Like, he doesn't want to wear clothes, he doesn't want to wear nappies, he doesn't want to wear pants, he doesn't want to. And there's just toileting all over the house, and it's just constant, you know, and there's no help.
It's an awful lot of pressure on you.
I've emailed, I've rang, I got a meeting then with a team because I kept emailing them, and I got a meeting in May 2022. And sure, we never got any further from the meeting. Like, it's all.
And Kirsty, when you hear, when you hear about, what was it they said, that children with the most complex needs in terms of speech therapy, OT and psychology services will prioritise. You've got 4 and 5 year olds there. You've outlined, some of the behaviour. You've outlined that, they're non-verbal at 4 and 5. You must ask yourself, well, if I'm not a severe case and if my boys aren't getting these services, you know, who is? And not that you would begrudge anyone,
exactly.
But you know what I'm on about. Like, you must be wondering, well, how bad must it be out there?
I know. I don't understand it at all. Like, and there, I got my boys is both diagnosed with the severe intellectual disability as well. Do you know?
But I mean, obviously, you've done what we'd all do.
How bad do they need to be?
Yeah, you'd do what we all do. You would say, right, well, public's letting us down. Let's price private. I think the private route is far beyond most people's needs. What What kind of prices are we talking?
Well, whenever I started pricing, I was like, "Oh no, I definitely can't afford this." The further it's really expensive. I was getting prices of over 1,000, but then I did find a lady in Donegal Town, and she was HSE recognised, and that was 350.
For
the autism diagnosis.
Well, that was just the diagnosis. But in terms of...
That was just the diagnosis. And then I was pricing there for the occupational therapist because we're really struggling with that now at the minute. And I went on and priced, and it's €450 for one day.
Oh, my God, yeah. And Kirsty...
It's 250.
No, that's
because
fine.
I have two, they would take 50. It would be 400 for both. And I was like, for one day, it's a lot of money.
And the thing is, too, like... This feels like lost time as well, because you're looking and saying, well, if we had these services, how would my boys be when they're 6 and 7 or 11 and 12? But 4 years, one has had no support at all, limited support for the other. It must be very difficult for you not seeing them progress like they possibly could if they had access to these services, or they likely would. I mean, that cuts to the core of us as parents.
I remember whenever I first went up, like, they were praising me, saying how good I was and how getting it so early and coming for the help so early and how important that is and how much it's going to help my boys getting that early intervention. And at this age is the most important age for them to soak into their wee brains. And sure, I've got nothing. Do you know, that was 4 years ago. And they were telling me that I was so good for getting them the help back then and how much it would help them, and they haven't got any help, do you know?
Yeah. And as we've heard from many other parents, that's when the fight starts, apparently. That's when the battle starts. I don't want to say anything that's triggering or anything, but how do you cope, Kirsty? With we've all had days when, you know, children play up, rip the nappy off and all that kind of stuff, but this is an ongoing situation for you, and trying to juggle so many balls in the air, it sounds like, Kirsty. I mean, how do you look after yourself?
I don't know. I ask myself it all the time. I don't know how I get through it. Like, it's hard. It's every single day is hard. Like, and I just have to keep going. Like, and I don't know.
Okay, well, listen, this is, it's people like you, Kirsty, while we're talking about it. This is why it's so important, and we can't continue to have people like you in their hundreds, if not thousands, across the county, certainly the region, battling these daily battles. Often must feel like it's very much a lonely space as well, Kirsty. Thanks.
It's the most lonely road.
Thanks so much for helping us, giving us an understanding.
All right, thank you.
All right, Kirsty. All right, okay, thank you. We have to take a quick break. Then we're going to speak to Doreen Friel from iCare, who, of course, will have a very clear insight into all of what we're talking about.
The 9 till noon show with Letterkenny Credit Union. Simplify your debts with a debt consolidation loan from Letterkenny Credit Union. Call us on 074-910-2126 or apply online via our app or in office today.
At Screwfix, you can click and collect over 10,000 trade products in as little as 1 minute. So whether it's a power drill in Port Leash or guttering in Galway, when you need it yesterday, just click at screwfix.ie and collect at your local store 7 days a week. T's and C's apply. Visit screwfix.ie for full details.
From the wild Atlantic Way to the West End, fly with Aer Lingus from Ireland West Airport Knock to London Heathrow from just €55.99 one way as part of a return trip. Use these daily flights to go from Mayo to Mexico and beyond. Connect via Heathrow to over 80 destinations worldwide. Book now at aerlingus.com. Fares are subject to conditions and availability.
Do you need a little extra help staying in your home? At Bluebird Care, we offer a wide variety of Qmark-approved personalised home care services across Donegal. And our fully trained and committed staff will always meet your care needs with kindness, compassion and dignity. To get your personal home care assessment plan, visit bluebirdcare.ie or call our care team today on 07491 29562 and bring care home.
Donegal Denture Clinic, Letterkenny. Denture problems? We can help. At Donegal Denture Clinic, we customise, personalise and tailor your dentures to suit you. Call us for a free consultation on 91 25 25 3. Find us at Ballyrain, Letterkenny, beside Rossin College. Medical cards welcome. For all your denture needs, call Donegal Denture Clinic on 91 25 25 3. Online at donegaldentureclinic.ie.
Doreen Friel, Vice Chair of iCare. Doreen, thanks for joining us this morning. Thanks for taking the call.
You're very welcome, Greg. Thanks for having us.
Familiar stories that we're hearing, stories, people's real life experience. As I said to the girls there during the break, I don't know how people do it, but they have to do it.
No. Sadly, Greg, all too familiar, and really, from an iCare point of view, it seems as if things have never been worse. And I heard you asking Kirsty earlier, how does she cope? Kirsty has no choice but to get up every day and cope, Greg. And that's the shocking part about this. These parents, they require support. It's not just the children that need support. The families need support. The parents need support. And the parents have been brilliant this past few days trying to highlight these issues and explain to you what they're living with. Many of these parents, Greg, are not sleeping at night on top of everything that they're living with through the day. So sadly, this is all too familiar to us here in iCare.
And I mean, iCare, Greg, itself, and I've been covering this for years, I presume it hasn't changed, in terms of what supports it can provide to the relevant families. Every single year, it's the annual battle to get funding just to keep going. I simply don't know how you guys do it either.
Well, you know how we do it, Greg. We are completely supported by our community here, and I want to acknowledge that, and I want to thank every single person in our community. iCare is actually 23 years old this month, and we have been supported throughout those 23 years by our community. They have sustained us and supported us. They continue to do that, and every bit of it's needed. So a huge thank you to every member of the community who organises a fundraiser, who comes into a coffee morning. It all makes a difference to us and to the children and adults and the families that we're trying to support.
I think over the last while, Doreen, I think we've highlighted or we've sort of got to the bottom of what all the problems are here in terms of recruitment, retention and all that type of stuff, how jobs are advertised, how you'd have to be a detective to find them unless you're the member of some Facebook page or something, how the UK treat those qualifying in some of these areas so much different to here. There's a lot to work on, but I just don't get the feeling there's anyone working on it, Doreen, and that's why we have to keep at it.
Absolutely. And like, we could talk for hours on end about what the different families are going through. And I reached out to the families last night, and it's across the board: speech therapy, OT, physio, psychology, everything, access to CAMS. You know, we could talk forever, but it's, as you say, what can we do about this? No, who is raising this at the top levels? Over the years, Greg, we've always realised that health and education don't seem to communicate very well together, and it is the families and the children who fall between stools. You know, I would appeal to every single parent, grandparent, uncle, aunt, family member, sister, brother, friend. We all need to challenge our public representatives. This has to be on the agenda of every single meeting that takes place, regardless of where it's taking place or what it's about. They're currently down, wherever they are in Ireland, having their think-ins. Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael will do theirs shortly. This needs to be on their agenda, and I would appeal to all political representatives to put this on the front burner. This is shocking in this day and age.
This party, this Sinn Féin having a go at Fianna Fáil about this and Fianna Fáil having a go at Sinn Féin about that. It's not reading the room. We need people, whomever they are, I don't care what party or none they're with, we need people to sort of say, actually, these are the issues that we need to tackle, that we need to be working on, because it's just completely unacceptable. This is an absolute crisis. And the problem is, you see, it affects thousands of people, but it doesn't affect enough to turn an election. And therefore, forget about it.
But if their friends and families and everybody make this a burning issue, Greg, it could affect the outcome of an election. And you're exactly right. We don't care who anybody votes for, whether it's Sinn Féin, whether it's Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Green Party. We just want the people who are in these positions where they can make change to make the changes that are required. Very often when you're working with a child with additional needs, Greg, it can be the smallest adjustment that can make a huge difference. And very often at the highest levels, it could be the smallest of adjustments that would make the biggest difference to being able to employ people and attract them into a position. And I would also appeal to the parents, Greg. iCare began with a small group of seven parents who needed support, isolated in the community, came together, they needed support, and that was how iCare started. Mm. Parent power is huge.
It's a tough road too.
It's a very tough road.
Been involved in iCare since its inception.
And we've all been there from day one. It is a tough road, but it's also it's very empowering, Greg, also. Mm. And we have a parent support group. It was off for the summer and we were closed last week for staff training. Our support group will begin again next week. And I would appeal to any parent who can attend it to attend it. Parents learn from each other.
Do you know what we might do, Doreen? Because I have to go to the news.
Network.
I have to go to the news at 10. Perhaps maybe the day before that's re-established, you might come back on and we can talk about that in a little bit more detail.
Could I mention one thing before? Yep. Yeah, just to mention, there's always hope, and we're always trying to make sure that we can provide a good service for our members. We have been very successful with the AIB Community Fund, and we have been awarded €28,000, and we're going to be bringing PECS training to the community, Greg. So that will give some hope to some of the families out there. So just to make people aware that that will happen on the 11th and 12th of April. It would be brilliant if families could attend that. Get your babysitters booked now well in advance, because that will be so helpful. Mm. But we will keep working away here in iCare and keep trying. We'll meet with our parents and we will come back to you, Greg, before we set up our parents.
Please do.
We'll and thank you very much for having us.
No problem, Doreen. Doreen Friel, Vice Chair of iCare. Back with more after the news at 10, which will be a minute late.